I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the Rugby Tonight podcast. I'm Ben Kay, and joining me today is Brian O'Driscoll. Hello, Brian.
Hello.
This weekend, we saw the last round of fixtures in the Aviva Premiership, and now all the attention turns to the European Champions and Challenge Cup finals in Bilbao. But before all that, let's have a look at some of the rugby news around the world. And item one, Brian, I think is probably in and around England's selection, not just of Eddie Jones's squad, which will probably just have been announced as this goes out onto the airwaves, but also his coaching lineup. Do you think he's going to make any drastic changes with what happened in the Six Nations?
Well, you get the sense that he needs to include someone in there. I know there's talk, I don't know if it's fully confirmed, that Rory Teague, who was originally with the England setup, has gone to Bordeaux, is highly rated down there, particularly since Jacques Brunel has left for the French head coach job. Whether he comes in, you do look back on the Six Nations. When you're coming from back-to-back champions, and then do they finish fifth of six yeah. teams in the Six Nations? There's something not right. And they're definitely their attack game. Looked blunt at times. Yeah. They looked devoid of ideas. They lost their shape. So I definitely think it's an area that they need to focus on. They've lost three on the bounce. It's so unlike, you know, an Eddie Jones team. It is three on the bounce, isn't it? Yeah. yeah. It's so unlike an Eddie Jones team. So they have to try and fix it and quickly, because they've got a tough tour coming up against a rejuvenated Springbok team.
And do you think, if Rory Teague, let's say Bordeaux don't want him to go, and he's obviously the head man there, so he's going to be planning for next season. Does he go for a safe appointment? He said he wants an attack coach. Does he go for a safe appointment? Does he go for an English guy? We know he's used Glenn Eller before in Australia. What do you think his mindset would be?
Well, I suppose, like all senior, you know, or head coaches, they probably have a lot of difficulty in delegating that much responsibility yeah. and. It's definitely the case in Ireland as well. I think Joe Schmidt oversees things, but he definitely likes to have a heavy hand in everything, all different departments, irrespective of having, you know, a key contributor to that, be it forwards, defence or attack shape. So the personality of that individual has to fit in keeping with what Eddie Jones is looking for. And multiple conversations would have taken place in advance of, you know, outlining exactly what is wanted and what that role remit was going to be. And I'm sure Eddie would have laid down the mark as to making sure that individual doesn't overstep the line, overstep the mark as to who's in control and who yeah. ultimately has final decision on how the team plays.
Talking of a similar situation, maybe, because a lot of us are wondering why Danny Cipriani hasn't had an opportunity with Eddie Jones's squad. There's a lot of clamouring for him to be taken on this tour. Rumours, you know, or you might think that a good time to maybe rest an Owen Farrell, or even if you take him, to use him sparingly. If you were Eddie Jones, would you take Danny Cipriani?
Well, I think it's a difficult one, because I don't personally know Danny Cipriani. I know Danny Cipriani the player, so I don't know. You hear Chinese whispers of, you know, what sort of character is behind the scenes. You know, is he divisive? Has he matured? Has he moved on from that media persona of his early 20s? He definitely appears to be a very diligent athlete. He looks after himself extremely well. I was reading Matthew Syed today talking about spending time with him over the last couple of weeks and how, you know, how impressive he found him. And that was all based or sparked off the back of an article that he had written a few weeks back where Danny Cipriani challenged him and said it's unwarranted, of the words that he used. And he said it was all based on a previous persona. So you look at, on the face of it, from the outside, not knowing what he's like when you're not on the training park or not in team meetings, I think on form, Danny Cipriani is one of the informed players in England, undoubtedly the informed 10 in England as well. And is that balance of him being good in a squad, on top of being in huge form, is that a good enough collaboration for the, for it to be a positive move for England? I'm probably not in a position to dictate that or to answer that. But on the face of it, he is in the form of his life, and he seems very difficult to not pick.
I've always said that, and granted, everything that you just said is, a lot of it is people's opinions and preconceptions of what he's like. But I've always said, because of that, he's got to be playing a lot better than, the guy that's got the shirt. He's got to show that he's got that golfing class for the coaches to go, well, actually, I don't know this guy that well personally, but I hear all these things about him. But if he's good enough that actually we can't afford to be without him, he goes into the squad. And I think he's reached that stage this year. I don't think George Ford has been playing quite to the level that we've seen him before. A lot of that might be down to how the packs have played in front of him. But I think Danny Cipriani's vision and the way he's got that Wasp backline ticking, I think he warrants that place in the squad now. But also, it's a little bit ironic that we don't know where he's going to be playing his rugby next year because of that England law system or the RFU law where you've got to be an English player. So is he biding his time now to see if he gets a shot before he makes a decision where his contract's going to lie next year?
There's no doubting his attacking qualities. Any concerns around his defence? Has he shored that up a little bit?
So not to the extent. I don't think either he or George Ford ever shirk a tackle, which is... We've seen tens that do that. I think George Ford showed in that Newcastle game that he hasn't got the frame to be able to stop runners as well as an Owen Farrell has, or certainly a Johnny Wilkinson used to have. I don't think you'd ever call Danny Cipriani one of those destructive defenders, but he will put his body in the way, and we've seen him make some brilliant covering tackles as well. So I think Cipriani's a good enough defender to play international rugby, without a doubt.
Yeah, it's hard to argue with that, and I suppose time will tell. Will Eddie Jones finally get him included in the squad and pick on form? Because that's what players want. Players want, rather than coaches picking on reputation or what's been done in the past, players like being picked on current form and to shake things up, and Eddie Jones has done it in the past.
Yeah, it's always an interesting time of year. It's not just the England team that's been the squad that's been announced this week. We've got Wales and Scotland. Now, you've also got the problem of, you've got some Lions players, and how do you deal with them on an England perspective? Do you take a Dan Cole that had that Lions trip and then has been played so much by England and Leicester this year? So what's your opinion on the best way? You're a man who's been on more Lions tours than most. What's the best way of looking after those players the following season?
Is Dan Cole going to be, you're one or two for the World Cup in 2019? He is. So will he be better off having a good pre-season this year, having a good 4 or 5 week break? Absolutely. So I think, yes, the age profile would suggest that he could do with it, but you look at the amount of minutes he's played and his injury profile over the course of the year. He's been on the park on so many occasions, and even sometimes it's even coming off the bench. You still do all the work in the week, and then you mightn't play a full 60 or 70 minutes. You might only play 20, but that is impactful, and that's cumulative. And I think someone like him, I think the smart play would be to leave him behind and let him just freshen up a little bit and enjoy time at home.
The reason he's in the squad primarily is his scrummaging ability. He's not the most dynamic ball carrier, and he's not the ultimate defender.
Difficult man to shift off a ball.
Absolutely brilliant over the ball, but his scrummaging would be his major strength. And I guess what he can do against South Africa, you don't know what some of the other guys can do, and give them a shot where they're not getting 30 minutes at the end of a game or vice versa.
Well, you'll see that in the Welsh squad.
Yeah.
With the announcement that Warren Gatland is going to leave at home all his Lions players from last year. Now, you know, I contradict myself slightly because Corey Hill is one of the joint captains who's technically a Lion from last year as well.
Flown in.
Who's obviously had a pretty impressive season himself. But interesting that he's definitely adopting that philosophy of squads are needed to win World Cups. Inevitably, you're going to have injuries. And, you know, rather than throwing players in, you know, that have limited numbers of caps, you know, only players that have 2, 3, 4 caps into the biggest environment, the biggest occasion, you're better off having, you know, 10, 15, 20 caps under your belt to be able to fully understand what's expected of you at international level. And the only opportunity of getting that, it's very difficult to do that in Six Nations because so much is at stake. This summer tour and the November of the year leading up to a World Cup is the opportunity to give those players more of a chance, more game time and see what they're worth.
The only thing about that, and I just wonder, you know, we all sort of, when you're not involved in the camp, you sometimes think, well, he's deciding what team he's going to pick the week before. A lot of the planning ahead of a World Cup's done 4 years in advance, isn't it? They talk about peaking at the right times and the fitness staff are involved in that. But I just wondered whether he was really hit by injuries in the Six Nations, Warren Gatland. And actually, it's probably the best thing that could have happened to them because he played a load of players at least a few players that wouldn't necessarily have got much game time had there not been those injuries, and they all stood up and showed they were genuine options. And so I just wonder, has that shaped slightly this, that he thinks, well, actually, there's probably a few more rough diamonds out there that we need to consider? Or was this already in the plan? And it just maybe now some of those guys that didn't get a go in the Six Nations are looking, going, well, he's now considered an international player, I should be.
It's probably a bit of both, you know. I think it's these players have put their hand up, given the opportunity, maybe before they thought it was their time, and they've performed pretty well at Six Nations level. You look at the games that they lost. You know, they weren't a million miles, one score away from England. Ultimately, two scores away with that intercept that Jacob Stockdale made in the last play of the game. They were only 6 points behind at that stage. So they're really not far away with a reduced squad. So you put all that core group of players back in. You put Toby Faletau into any team. We haven't even been talking about Sam Warburton this year. He hasn't played since the Lions tour, pretty much. You put him back in the mix. You put a really fit Liam Williams back in there. A Dan Biggar who's had his injury woes this year. So you put all those players back in with that youthful vigour of players that have broken onto the scene. You've got a pretty impressive
team.
They
are a threat, aren't they? Before we move on to Scotland, you mentioned it before, I think, that two players, Corey Hill and Ellis Jenkins, have been made co-captains. A lovely tweet from Ellis Jenkins' sister, Katie, which was, when you finish 4 years of uni on the same day that the Golden Child is co-captain of Wales. And then she's posted a picture of a text chat with her mum, which says, well done, darling. Oops, sorry, wrong child. And then she's come back with Ellis in the squad, is he? So good to see that rugby is still the most important thing in Wales, not your education. And Katie Jenkins, we're all very impressed that you finished 4 years of university. Just before we move on, what do you make of that co-captain idea?
Yeah, it's a tricky one. You know, I get it, shared responsibilities and giving an opportunity to potentially future captains to, you know, learn side by side. But I think it's hard to have that domineering necessity as a captain when there's someone in a joint role.
It's quite a New Zealand thing, isn't it? They've started doing. We've seen quite a few of the Super Rugby franchises do it, and a bit of that creeping into the clubs over here as some of the directors of rugby have come from down there. I'm not sure I like it, because I don't really see the point of it, because in most setups you have your vice captains or even your leadership group that may not have even been nominated by the coach, but you just know who the leaders are in the team, and I just think that
it's hedging bets a bit, isn't it?
Yeah.
And
Does he know who he's going to play in every game? Is he going to play? They've obviously got tests against South Africa, USA, and Argentina. Now, I guess both those guys might not play in all the tests. Mm. Oh, it's very interesting. Yep. Anyway, Scotland, They've called up six uncapped players: Lewis Carmichael, Jamie Ritchie, Matt Ferguson, George Horn, Adam Hastings and James Lang. And Stuart McInally is going to captain Scotland for those tests against Canada, United States and Argentina. What
interesting to see Adam Hastings in there, son of Gavin, who wasn't really working for him at Bath last year. Went up to Glasgow to play behind Finn Russell. He's obviously learnt a lot in, particularly with Finn, not touring this year, and he's been given some opportunity. He's obviously progressed well in that Glasgow setup, and now an opportunity to break into the first team. So yeah. I'm sure Gav will be an interested spectator.
And Argentina, obviously, they're a really big game. They haven't always had success against Argentina, but they're on such a high after the performance, in particular against England, as Doddy Weir, who was on our show a couple of weeks ago, couldn't stop reminding us about the Calcutta Cup win. So where are they? Where do they need new young players coming through, or do they need some stability?
Well, there's a few there. There's players like Matt Ferguson, who's been good. George Horn has been very good the latter part of the season. I think we were all a bit shocked by their initial performance in the Six Nations. They flattered to deceive in that first game. They'd had a really impressive November series, beating Australia really well, narrowly losing out to New Zealand. We had so much hope for them, and then Wales put them to the sword in Cardiff in game one, and then just takes the wind out of out of their sails a little bit. But then they got that going again with a huge performance against England. The big question for me is about consistency with Scotland, and can they win away from home? They've got a terrible record in Six Nations of winning away from home. It's one thing winning in Murrayfield, but respect and credibility only comes when you go on the road. So great opportunity this summer, and Argentina is the one that they've got to go down and win down there.
A tough place to go and win, Argentina.
Not easy. Never played there, but it looks pretty brutal.
It's a great tour, mind. Right, before we move on from the news, while we were on air with Rugby Tonight, it was the RPA Players Awards ceremony, and the main prize for Players Player, and probably the one that players probably covet the most because it's voted for by your peers, though you can't vote for anyone in your own team. But Talusa Vayanu won the RPA Players Player of the Year. Deserved?
Yeah, I think, listen, you were a bit spoiled for choice, even at fullback. Willie LaRue had an outstanding, and he's still going strong. Yeah. Another good performance at the weekend. I think, you look at Jason Woodward playing well there. Is he going to get capped by England on the summer tour? So even at 15, I think we've been spoiled for choice. Talking earlier about Danny Cipriani, the way he's played, the manner in which he's got that back line ticking and that attack game of Wasps going so well. So yeah, if you're outperforming and you're being picked by your peers ahead of some of the players that have played as well as they have this year, you must be doing something right.
I love the Talusa story though, because he didn't have a club to go to. When the World Cup finished, he didn't have a contract. He didn't have anywhere to go. Leicester took a chance on him, and he has become the player's player. And to think that we might have lost that finishing ability and that ability to beat people from the Premiership is amazing. There must be a few other lost people out there.
I'm sure. And then into Young Player of the Year. No huge surprises on this one.
No, I mean, Ben, he broke onto the scene right at the beginning of the year, but partly because of the, as is often the way for young players, the injury to Kachakilis gave him more game time. Harlequins were really struggling at halfback because of injuries. Not that he wouldn't have got a game anyway, but they couldn't manage his progression probably quite as much as they would have wanted to. I think when he first broke into the team, John Kingston was doing his best to keep him away from too much media and stuff, but then he was suddenly the linchpin 10 and trying to hold it all together while everyone was falling around by his feet. So
this is obviously Marcus Smith that we're talking about, having not mentioned him at the top. Yeah, he's had a huge year and he's been catapulted into the limelight and training with England and earmarked as a future 10, but he seems to have a really well-rounded game. He seems to have an appetite to learn. He seems to be a well-rounded individual, and I think that impresses coaches, particularly when you get into international setup. They want to look at the individual as well as the skill set.
Yeah, we've had a lot of young tens come through the ranks of English rugby and get capped very early on. Johnny obviously got capped really early. George Ford, Owen Farrell. I think Marcus Smith is a slightly different sort of 10. He's slightly more of a running threat, attacking threat. Maybe those guys were a little bit more conservative. And as a result, it's almost easier to put them into the test arena because that experience isn't quite as vital in knowing when to throw that miracle pass and when to make that break and not get caught. But certainly, at times, he's made some electric breaks and be great to see him in an England shirt one day. And then Danielle Waterman, who was on with Doddy on Rugby Tonight, she has won the O2 England Women's Player of the Year just as she retires.
She's just retired recently, a couple of weeks ago, isn't that right?
I mean, I don't want to say this and sound patronising in any way at all, but one of the best England players I think there's been, and we've just talked about a young man, Marcus Smith, making some exciting breaks, and Talusa Vayanu. You look at her highlights reel, and it is off the charts brilliant. And so we wish her very well in her future. And then the final one, England's Men's Player of the Year in association with All Sport Insurance. One for the heavies, Mako Vunipola won that. So fair, do you think?
Yeah, again, you know, a very consistent year. Even when England weren't shining in the Six Nations, I think he was one of the standout performers. Yeah. You look back to that Ireland game on St. Patrick's weekend, and I thought, you know, I couldn't believe he was being substituted at 60 minutes. He was undoubtedly their best performer. Yeah. So I think that's a real sign of an individual, of when teams aren't going well, if you're still able to impose yourself, you're still able to play your game, you're still able to stand out from the crowd. So hard to argue with
I think he's only going to get better because the level of competition that he's got in and around him for Lucid. So we know Joe Marler's job. I think Ellis Genge, his stock is rising. He's a supreme athlete, Ellis Genge, and I think that's that level of competition between those three guys. We've got Hepburn as well coming into the squad from the Chiefs. It's only going to drive Mako to become even better, and so maybe we've still got the best years ahead of him. Right, let's move on. And last weekend, the sun came out for the final weekend of the Aviva Premiership, with the semi-final matchups and European spots all decided. I guess the big games were the ones that we were covering on BT Sport, and Leicester Tigers managing to recover from missing out on the on the semi-final spots by securing their Champions Cup spot for next season with a 35-13 away victory to Sale. I think the big story from that was that George Ford, who, you know, some of the pundits have been criticising, man of the match, and he answered his critics.
By his standards, he hasn't had a great 6 months, both in white and in the green of Leicester, but he certainly stood up and had a big performance. Obviously, they'd be bitterly disappointed. I think it's the first year in 13 that Leicester haven't qualified for the playoffs, which is remarkable in itself. But
14. Yeah, 14, they did 13 on the bounce.
To go and win away, which is no easy game in the AJ Bell against Sale, to go and put 35 points on a Sale team that, you know, were still in the mix themselves, is pretty impressive.
Yeah, and then the other big game was the battle for who was going to play who in the semi-finals. Wasps against Newcastle up at Kingston Park. Wasps came out with a 39-22 emphatic victory. Any surprises? Did you think Dean Richards was that bothered about the game that with the way he set his team up?
Well, listen, they knew with the number of victories that they had that they had that buffer. You know, they had that 14. I think it was 14 victories that they knew Leicester couldn't get to. So they knew that they were going to be finishing in fourth place most likely. If Wasps were to win, it's much of a muchness in the semi-finals. Who would you prefer to be playing, Exeter in Sandy Park or?
I guess the other thing I thought was, I think Newcastle play more like Exeter. But Exeter are very good at it. And so would you have preferred to have gone and played Saracens if you're Newcastle and play a difference and try and own the tactics, if you like, and try and get them into an arm wrestle?
I think we'll see a different Newcastle next week, I think.
Absolutely. Their blueprint's probably Leinster from earlier in the season, because Leinster went there and
played them at their own game
and out-muscled them. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it'll be really interesting. And Wasps, I think Saracens will be slightly nervous about playing them with the way they played. Shall we move on to those European finals. We just mentioned Leinster. Bilbao, we're off there on Thursday.
Tough gig.
Yeah, be really hard.
I think firstly, I think it's great that they're trying to get into new territories. Yeah. I think it's brilliant that we're spreading the love beyond the UK, Ireland, France, trying to get into areas to grow the game. And
but I think as well, you go to destinations where people are going to want to travel, regardless of whether their team's there. So you can sell those tickets early and not rely on the finalists selling, you know, all of the tickets. And so I think it's a great idea.
I've already bought my tickets for Newcastle on that note for next year.
Tuxedo Princess.
Good night down on Osborne Rules.
I think it's sunk. I think the Tuxedo Princess has sunk. Well, I don't know what we're going to do. Madame Coos, I think, was the favourite spot from a couple of years ago. So what do you expect to happen? And I think we all know that Leinster are favourites. Machinot, is that a killer blow?
Huge.
Can they deal without
it? I think it's absolutely huge. Just the form that he was in, particularly the way he played, not just that semi-final. I think he's dictated play extremely well for them in the group stages. He's navigated them through games, had some really big important moments over the course of the group stage, and his loss just seems enormous on a couple of levels. Obviously, from a guidance perspective, his goal kicking, he's got a huge percentage. I think it's 84%+, and the knock-on effect to that is, you know, who do you play then at 10? Who comes in as a goal kicker? I don't know what Pat Lambie's numbers are off the top of my head, but I would think that Dan Carter's numbers are better than Pat Lambie's. Yeah. So does that mean that Carter comes in and potentially starts ahead of Lambie?
Would that bother Leinster in the slightest?
I'd prefer to play against Pat Lambie. I won't lie. I would prefer to play against Pat Lambie
Carter's
if I was
a born
Leinster.
Winner and
just because, yeah. Because you know he's got one more big game. One. Yeah, he's got a huge one in him. And I was unbelievably impressed with him in the semi-final. He came on and his tackling.
Yeah.
He made two guaranteed try saving tackles. Yeah. And 36, I think he is now. You know, 10s at 36 general, you know, they're pulling the handbrake up. They're starting to check out.
Yours.
And he was exceptional.
Yeah. I think it would be a massive upset if Leinster.
Do you know what would be great for the game? Would be if Racing, maybe not quite started like they did against Munster, but if they start with, you know, and score first.
Yeah.
I think that'll rattle cages and then we'll see what Leinster are made of.
And they've got potential players that can create opportunities out of nothing. You know, Nakarawa, his offloading ability, Teddy Toma. You know, there are people who have been in rich veins of form, both for Racing and obviously Teddy Toma was for France before his little indiscretion in Edinburgh. So there's certainly people that could, if it's I guess for Racing, you say about a big start, but equally, if they're in touch with 60 minutes to go, I think Leinster are going to be we should have put this to bed. That's going to be their mindset. And you look in the eyes of the people that are opposite you and you know that there's people that can score that miracle try.
I think the only thing is I do think stats can sometimes lie, but in this case, I don't know about Racing being an 80-minute team.
Yeah.
You know, they score a huge
their
points
are heavy, aren't they?
In the first 20 minutes. They get off to flying starts and their defence has been pretty miserly in this competition and in the top 14 as well. So, if you have that firepower early on and then you make it difficult for sides to beat you. But I think Leinster have a little bit more ingenuity to their game plan. They're going to be able to pull that defensive system apart a little bit more. So it's a really interesting tussle. But I obviously hope that my old team manage to get it done. But undoubtedly, it'll be the toughest test for them this season.
That is live on BT Sport 2 this weekend. Before we get to that game, which is obviously on Saturday, coverage beginning at 4 p.m, the European Challenge Cup final is on Friday night with Gloucester taking on Cardiff Blues. That's a 7:15 kickoff.
Who do you like in that?
It's tough. I think I would make Gloucester favourites.
Yeah, I agree.
Funnily enough, the likes of Ed Slater coming in and just adding a bit of steel to that forward pack. So yes, they've got some great players like Jason Woodward that can, you know, open. They've got a back line that can open you up, but they've just got the ability to outmuscle you as well. Ackerman giving you the explosive ball carries as well. So I guess the only problem they've got is they've got a few guys missing. I'll say only problem. Obviously, Cardiff will have something to say about that, but no Willie Hines, Owen Williams, Charlie Sharples, and it looks like Tom Savage might be out. But I think they've got enough in there. I don't think there are positions that they can't deal without those guys. But, I mean, you probably have seen more of Cardiff this year.
And they've been really good the second part of the season again. Cardiff are a strange one, particularly in Pro 14. They've gone under the radar, but they comfortably qualified as third place in their conference. Again, they've have a good defence. They don't score a huge number of tries themselves, but they make it hard for the opposition to score. They've got the double playmaker in Jared Evans and Gareth,
who's been very good,
and Gareth Anscombe, obviously, who's playing some really good stuff.
Yeah.
Evans not going on that Welsh tour, so I'm sure he'll have a point to prove in one of the final games of the season. They both got credentials in this tournament too. Gloucester won it a couple of years ago, I think. Cardiff went and won in France against Toulon before they really emerged back in 2010. So, you know, neither of them will be scared of the occasion. It's an opportunity to finish the season with trophy, with silverware, and that's a big carrot at the end of your year.
I think that'll be huge. So I think we've probably got a plane to catch to Bilbao. So don't forget, that's Friday night, 7:15 on BT Sport 2 for the European Challenge Cup, Gloucester against Cardiff Blues, and then Leinster take on Racing 92 for the European Champions Cup, live from Bilbao on BT Sport 2, and coverage begins on Saturday at 4 p.m. That's all we got time for this week. Next week on the Rugby Tonight podcast, we'll be looking ahead to the Aviva Premiership semi-finals as Exeter take on Newcastle and Saracens host Wasps. Be sure to subscribe and leave a review if you've enjoyed the show, and thanks for listening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.